This is the RDU on Stage podcast. On this episode, we are talking about the play Columbinus. In 1999, two high school seniors went on a shooting rampage at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, killing 13 people and wounding 20 others before turning their guns on themselves. Since Columbine, over 200 people have been killed in school shootings in the United States. Tammy Matthews was a teacher working at a nearby elementary school when the Columbine shooting happened. Little did she know then that nearly 20 years later, another school shooting, this one in Parkland, Florida, would be the catalyst for the creation of the ensemble group Social Justice Theater of the Carolinas, which is an offshoot of Pittsboro Youth Theater. At the time of the Parkland shooting, Pittsboro Youth Theater was in rehearsal for a production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. And that's where my conversation with Tammy and 17-year-old actress Jacqueline Anthenian begins. Here's Tammy.
We were rehearsing A Midsummer Night's Dream the day of the Parkland shootings. And a couple of our girls came in early, and they were visibly upset. And they came in, and they wanted to talk about it. So we talked for a minute, and I said, you know, we really need to get to rehearsal because other people were coming in that really didn't even know about it yet. And so afterwards, I sat and talked with the two girls for a little while, and they said, we really need to do something about this. We need to do some, I don't know what, but we need to do theater, and we need to do something, and this is what we do, and we need to do something. And I said, okay, well, I'll think about it. And about 3 days later, I was looking for a completely different script in my script room, and found something that somebody had given me at some point called Columbinus. And that just was like, wow, what kismet. And so I gave it to one of the girls to read, and that's how we got here.
Anything that surprised you hearing the kids talk about the school shooting? I mean, sadly, this is different than Columbine. It's become so much of our culture, so much of the norm, so much of our news cycle. So was there anything in hearing these young people talk about it either at school or before rehearsal or after rehearsal that surprised you as they were unpacking this information about Parkland?
That day, no. I was actually glad to see that they were affected. I guess I was slightly shocked because it had become every day. But you know, these are wonderful kids that do feel things deeply, so it didn't surprise me that these kids were bringing up this issue. A lot of things throughout the rehearsal surprised me, though, because we did a lot of talking. Part of this rehearsal process is we had a counselor come in, and we spent half an hour of every rehearsal talking about deeper issues that have to do with this to make sure that everybody was okay, because this is something, especially like playing Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, that could really affect you. And a lot of what surprised me during that time had to do with the things they still deal with every day at school that I thought probably would have gotten better over the years, like homophobic slurs and things that racism, things that I thought, wow, I thought that would be better than when I was in school.
Jacqueline, I think in the past, young people would view events like this and kind of feel a little helpless to do much, to affect change, to spark conversation. How have you found that theater and this medium helps you use your voice for good?
Well, I mean, theater itself is an amazing place to start conversations. One of the most unique things about theater is that you can talk to anyone and they've probably been to see a play that you can connect, that you've seen and you both liked, and so you can talk about it. So already there's that piece of theater that is a conversation starter. So for me, being able to do something like this to change even the slightest mindset, just one person thinking a little bit differently, is all we need to start something more.
Was there anything in the process of the rehearsals, like Tammy was saying, there were things that surprised her, but was there anything in the rehearsal process that surprised you preparing for this show?
I hadn't fully been aware of what happened at Columbine myself. It was a little before my time. People don't really like to talk about it. So there were some parts of this play that when I looked into it, turned out to be true, that I was actually honestly really surprised by, because I didn't expect that to be true. There's a little bit of artistic license, so I thought maybe they were just trying to end the drama, but they weren't.
So like what?
There is a scene in the play where we kind of show what happened inside the school. It's not a recreation of events, but it was taken from interviews with some of the survivors as to what they saw happen. And so there is descriptions that I did not realize were true. So that really honestly surprised me and kind of humbled me that it wasn't just, I mean, I got into this because I knew it wasn't just another play, but that really cemented that fact. And some of my classmates, when we were having our discussions, they were talking about what they've gone through. And honestly, I have, in comparison to them, lived a very sheltered and straightforward life. And that was another aspect where it was just incredibly humbling to realize that other people do have to go through things that I don't.
Every single interview I've done, no matter who it is or how famous they are, when I ask them why theater is important, pretty much every single person has said that it builds empathy. So it sounds like through the rehearsal process, you were humbled, but you also maybe became empathetic to people who haven't had your same experience.
And it's made me kind of more aware of what's going on around me. Like, through hearing what they went through, when I've gone to school, I've started noticing more of what they're talking about in my classes that I didn't recognize before because it had no bearing on my person. And so it's actually been very much a gift to go through this play, because now I can see, I'm not just blindly observing, I'm seeing what's going on.
Let's talk about social media a little bit. Because 20 years ago when this event happened, social media was not nearly as accessible as it is now. So how do you as a young person feel that social media plays into these kinds of events, either positively or negatively?
Honestly, I do think it plays into it negatively. Social media can have some good effects, connecting people from across the world with similar tastes, but it can also be incredibly negative. I think it's created this kind of mindset of everyone cares about what I do, and I should care what other people think I care about, which has just led to more stress, more stigma, more just bad things, which can lead to bad events, like what this play is about.
So the interesting thing about this play is rather than take a side on the issue of gun control, this play is really about sparking conversation. And the playwright has several questions that you have on the website for people to think about after the play. And maybe if people read those questions before the play, they can kind of come in prepared to think about those things. So can you share some of those questions with me and some of the conversations you heard when you first did this play on the 20th anniversary weekend last year?
Well, the thing that I really enjoyed about the conversations afterwards was that a lot of people did come in, I think, with the idea that we really hyped the fact that there was going to be a conversation afterwards last year. And there is going to be again this year. So some community members came in ready to discuss gun control. They were ready. They hadn't read the questions online or anything, but they were ready to discuss gun control. And someone that would say, you know, when I walked in here, I thought that the only solution was gun control, which I'm not saying for or against right now, but now I see that there are things that we can all do. And I would hear that. And that's the whole point of the play, is that whether gun control and other things like that really get people arguing. And I'm not saying they're not important conversations. They need to be had at the political levels. But there's something that we can all do, and especially things that kids can do. And they can't make gun control legislation happen, but they can do things in school every day and on social media, and adults can do it as well. I mean, there's obvious places where those boys fell through the cracks. There's a scene where they went to a juvenile diversion program that was just a joke. It was a joke. And if those people had really tried to help them, and I'm not blaming it on just those people. It was probably a system they were working with. Believe me, I've been a teacher for years. I know what the system's like. But the point is, those people or people like that could have stopped them at any point. And so there's so many things that can happen that don't have to do with these hot-button topics that we really don't have a lot of control over anyway.
As a teacher, having worked in the school system, what can we do, parents and teachers and even administrators, what can we do as the adults in the room to help start these conversations?
Teachers need to be allowed to talk to the children about it. I always say in my opening speech, I was a teacher 25 minutes away from Columbine when it happened. I taught in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I was the day it happened, I was in class. And I wasn't allowed to talk about it. I taught fifth, sixth grade. I couldn't talk about it. I was a teacher in Cary, North Carolina when Sandy Hook happened. Those were kids our same age. The kids were terrified. We got a Wake County email that said, don't talk about it, tell them they're safe, was basically the agenda, the idea. And then I was a teacher still when Parkland happened. Again, told not to talk about it. Just sweep it under the rug. Tell them they're safe. That's it. We need to talk about it. That's the number one thing. If we could talk about it, we could say these things like, let's all be nice to the kid that sits alone at lunch, you know, and things like that, and take more responsibility and help and let me know if anybody's struggling. But we can't talk about it. And that's my big soapbox thing about this, is we need to be talking about it because kids need help. And the big part of this play, the first act of the play, is there are 8 children, and every single one of them has huge problems. Any one of them could have turned into a shooter. 2 of them did. And so that's the point, is that it could happen to lots of people.
So Tammy, take me back 20 years ago, teaching not that far away from Columbine. Mm-hmm. How did you or your school get word what was happening there?
Actually, I found out about it before school was over. My daughter called me. She was not in school at the time. She was 12, but she was not in school. She was somewhere else. And she called me and told me about it. And that's how I knew about it. So I told a few people at that point, but it was near the end of the day when I found out about it.
So the next day when you go back to school, obviously the whole community has heard about it,
right,
at this point. As a teacher, you're told not to say anything to your students?
Don't bring it up unless they bring it up. And of course they did. And then you talk about you're safe in the school, but not about ever anything about why it happened, just that you're safe and these are the procedures and this is what we're going to do and how the doors are locked and those kinds of things. And we weren't doing drills yet, of course, but that was, and then I think we raised some money and had somebody send some teddy bears over there, and that was basically the whole thing. And that was a pretty good school, too. It's not like it was a bad school. That's what everybody was doing. And there was that big teddy bear wall and stuff. So we sent somebody over there with flowers and things for it. But that was the end of it.
But nobody knew. I mean, you know, it just was a different time. Nobody really knew how to process these things.
Exactly. So I don't really fault them because they didn't know. But then when you get to Sandy Hook and then you get to Parkland and all the other ones, I just did some research. And in the first 45 weeks last year, there were 46 shootings. School shootings. Now, most of them, nobody died, so we barely even heard about them. But there were 40, more than one a week. And it's happening all the time. So we got to stop it.
Jacqueline, you're a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. Do you feel safe in school? What's going on in the schools that I think might surprise adults who aren't in the school system?
Well, honestly, like for me, there have been moments where I'm just walking around the school and I'm like, and I have the thought, this would be the perfect time if someone wanted to injure a lot of people. This would be the perfect time to do so because, like during class change, all the doors are unlocked so that the kids can move freely throughout the campus. We're overcrowded, so there's huge traffic jams, which means that if someone came in and had a gun, a lot of people would be dead or injured before you could really think about it.
Do you have lockdown drills?
We do, but only about one or two a year. Maybe more if something happens like close by or something. At Northwood, we had a false alarm where there was a hunter out back in the woods and someone heard a gunshot because he was hunting and so called a lockdown. And we sat there for about half an hour, not really knowing what was going on. And I mean, it turns out to be a false alarm, but in that moment, everyone's on their phones trying to communicate with their families. We're okay right now. There's something happening. I personally had to calm down my best friend, who was, like, in tears. You don't think about it every day. It's become enough of the norm that honestly, I'll hear from someone else, there was another shooting today, and I'm not horrified or anything. It's part of the norm, but there's still moments where I will recognize today could be my last day.
And you're 17 years old, so you're not supposed to really be thinking that.
One of our cast members at one point, one of the boys said, when I'm in a room, sometimes I think, where would I hide at the school if a shooter was here? If a shooter walked in the room, where would I hide? And I think you shouldn't be thinking about that. You should be thinking about what's my homework tonight or where's my pencil?
When you were working in Colorado, how long between the time of the shooting and the time that things changed in the school security-wise, how long a period was that?
I don't think anything changed right away. And then I left Colorado and went to Florida. But I didn't see a lot of major changes until after 9/11. And Wake County school I was at just recently, they just got their locked doors with the buzzer in the last couple of years. It was after Parkland, I think, or maybe right around the same time.
You did this play last year on the 20th anniversary of the Columbine shooting that weekend. Mm-hmm. What did you kind of learn from that you're bringing into these productions?
I think it's pretty nuanced things. It's like it wasn't like any major changes. And also the kids are older. And some of the children were only 14 when it started. That's just the oldest kids we had that wanted to get involved. And I've seen them grow. I think that all along we were so deeply into this that we were pretty on target with what we wanted to do in our vision on the first go-round. So that's why we really wanted to show it and do it again, because we're like, we've got this. We only got to do it twice. We've got to keep doing it. And we wanted to reach a bigger and wider audience. We want more. We could only seat 80 people back here, so only 160 people got to see it. So,
what did you learn from the experience last year that you're bringing to these performances?
Honestly, I think we had talked about having the discussions afterward and getting the audience talking before we started, but you don't fully realize how performance does until the audience talks. And so for me, I didn't fully realize how much this play was, how effective it was, until we had the audience talking. And that really reinforced for me that this was an incredible thing that we were doing. And so I'm trying to take more into my performance, to try and invest more into the personality and just give my performance as much as I possibly can to try and get more reactions, more from the audience and for the audience.
Although I'm not sure how much more she can give, because she is 100% in that. She makes me exhausted by the end.
What do you hope audience, both of you, what do you hope audiences this time around will get out of it, out of seeing this show?
My thought has always been, and it's kind of been our motto, if we can get one person to walk away from here and tell one person to talk about it, just to talk about it, and keep that going, that how many people around the world can you affect if you get one person to go talk to, if you could get one person to talk to 10 people, imagine what kind of butterfly effect you would have. Then if you could get 174 to talk, and that's about how many the Durham Arts Council holds, I think, imagine how much a great effect you could have on the world. And so that's been our thought all along, is just to get people to leave here and talk about solutions.
Like in other plays, there's the good guy and the bad guy, and you can really play into that. The Maleficent you can make all evil and creepy and whatnot, but in this one you can't. They're real people. They were real people. They enjoyed playing games, and they enjoyed playing sports, and they enjoyed their classes, and so they had families. You can't make them completely evil. So part of what I hope the audience will receive from this is that people who do these things, they are people. They're not completely evil. They could be reached ahead of time. They can be taught the right way to respond to stress or change or whatever it was.
What role does theater have in affecting social change? I think most people look at theater and it's entertainment, and you go, and obviously people go to the theater to be entertained. You want kind of that escapism. There's a place for that. But with this inaugural piece last year, your theater company is all about social justice and social change. So what role does theater have in affecting change?
I'm hoping it still has one. I mean, I feel like back in the 80s, 90s, we were doing a lot of theater that was really about deep thought. And then we got into doing seeing a lot of Disney stuff. And we do, our children's theater does that stuff, and I love it. But we started this separate wing because we want to get people to think deeply and talk about things. And I hope that we can still do that. I hope that as a society we realize that it's not just about walking out singing a show tune, that it can make you think. And our next topics are going to be about LGBTQ stuff. We have all kinds of things planned in the future after this is over to tackle different topics that are out there that we think are super important. And I hope that we can continue to get people to think and talk and discuss.
The Social Justice Theater of the Carolinas production of Columbinus is touring the Triangle through March. After each performance, a counselor will lead the community in a discussion between the actors and the audience. Links to performance dates, times, and locations can be found in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to the podcast. Follow us on social media at RDU on Stage, become a patron of this program, or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next week, I'll see you at the theater.